From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, the 2019 legislative session officially opens with Democrats in the majority in the Assembly and Senate. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on new ethics reform proposals from members of the Senate, including Liz Krueger, and the state is launching a new initiative to protect drinking water. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. The New York State legislative session began with ceremonies and excitement this week as Democrats claimed their solid majority in the state Senate and made history with the election of a new female leader. They promised to act quickly on a long list of progressive issues, including strengthening abortion rights and expanding voter access. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
And I've been waiting to say these words. Majority Leader Andrea Stewart Cousins, congratulations.
New York's Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul, in her role as Senate President, was the first to introduce new Senate Leader Andrea Stewart Cousins. Stewart Cousins breaks ground as the first woman and African-American woman leader of the state Senate in the body's 241 years.
Sometimes, even in seemingly progressive places like New York, barriers still exist. We are going to break down some more barriers.
Stewart Cousins thanked her family, Senate colleagues, and God above for what she said was an incredible moment. And she told the packed chamber that if the Democrats do things right, she won't be the last woman to lead the Senate. Stewart Cousins pledged to act quickly to hold anti-sexual harassment hearings, strengthen rights for transgender New Yorkers, and make it easier to vote.
We're going to implement early voting, combat voter suppression, make registering to vote easier, allow voting by mail. We're finally going to give New Yorkers an honest, functional, ethical government that they deserve.
17 new senators were also sworn into office Wednesday by the state's Chief Judge, Janet DeFiore.
And that I will faithfully discharge my duties
as New York State Senator.
As New York State Senator.
They were surrounded by family and friends as a festive air took over the Senate chamber. Senator Liz Krueger, an advocate for progressive issues who's beginning her ninth term in the Senate, is encouraged by the changes.
There's just this level of excitement about all the things we can do for the people of New York, and also at a level of seriousness about what this responsibility is and that we're going to get it right. I've never quite had that feeling the other 16 years I've been here in Albany.
Senator Krueger says Senate Democrats plan to move fast and will likely approve a measure to codify the abortion rights in the 1973 U.S. Supreme Court decision Roe v. Wade into law on January 22nd. That's the anniversary of the landmark ruling. But not everyone is thrilled with the new direction of the state government. Members of New York's Right to Life Party picketed outside the chamber against the bill, known as the Reproductive Health Act. Holly Delavan, with the group's Syracuse chapter, is against amending the state's late-term abortion laws to allow the procedure to protect the health of the mother.
I think they are going to abuse it because they're going to interpret health as being how they feel about it. I mean, it might be financial. It could be, well, it's too much and I can handle it right now. There's always adoption.
Supporters deny that the provisions would be abused. Republicans, who are now in the minority in the chamber and have their lowest number of members in decades, are also discontent. They held a news conference to complain about new rules enacted by the Senate Democrats. They say they'll limit Republicans' participation on committees. Deputy Minority Leader Joe Griffo says his party will now play the role of loyal opposition, advocating for issues that he says the Democrats might neglect, including holding the line on spending and taxes.
We're going to present our vision for New York. And we're going to express our concerns and outline where we disagree philosophically, politically, and on policy.
Meanwhile, in the Assembly, Democrats also began the year by making history. They elected Crystal Peoples Stokes as the first woman and African-American woman to serve as majority leader. Governor Cuomo was not at the Capitol to witness the historic events. Wednesday was the day set aside under the state's constitution for a governor to give the annual State of the State message, but Cuomo has opted to deliver his address later in the month. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. The New York State legislative session kicked off. We have history being made with Andrea Stewart Cousins, the first woman to lead the state Senate. Both houses of the legislature are now Democratic. You had an interesting conversation with Senator Liz Krueger, and they're coming out guns blazing, including a new ethics commission.
Well, that's right. That's what she said. That's what our wonderful Liz Krueger said. Nevertheless, so far, I've really had some great hope for Andrea Stewart Cousins. But when it comes to ethics and ethics reform, the wagons tend to get a little tighter and to circle. Who wants to be put into a position that because of something they've done or want to do or an option to do, will be told you can't do that? So I'm saying I'm from Missouri. I'm really not, but show me.
Well, let's go from there to one of the other things that Senator Liz Krueger talked about. She stood with Hillary Clinton and Governor Cuomo at Barnard College to announce the move to codify abortion rights into New York state law.
Well, I don't think there are many people who think that this court, appointed by Trump, the Supreme Court, isn't going to either modify or downright get rid of Roe versus Wade. So therefore, in New York, this is going to be a terribly important thing to codify it, to constitutionalize it, to make sure that what happens on the national stage will not be happening in New York. You know, New York did the right thing years and years ago. It was courageous. Women should be allowed to determine what's going on with their own bodies, not a bunch of guys who decide this is wrong and who cater to a particular group. So in my mind, this is going to happen. They are going to codify it. They've got the majority in both of those two houses, and they will do what they need to do. And when it gets brought up, I guarantee you there'll be some Republican votes for it.
The other thing they seem determined to do, including the governor, who's evolved, we'll say, on this issue, is to legalize adult use of marijuana. Of course, we have Vermont and Massachusetts now and New Jersey moving forward, and the governor's expected to release details of his plan. The governor's conceding, and many others, that there are a lot of unanswered questions on how to go about this.
Well, you know, he was against it. Now he's for it. Now he has unanswered questions. This is tough, because I guarantee you the first person who crashes and kills somebody high on marijuana is going to come right back to his door, and he knows it. Nevertheless, it's a done deal. It's done in Massachusetts. My little town of Great Barrington, where I live, certainly is ahead of things. Northampton is ahead of things. New Jersey is getting there. The governor said, why should we be the only one? He told me, why should we be the only ones who aren't doing this? There's no way we cannot do it. So it's going to happen.
Then there'll be the inevitable fight, Alan, over what to do with the profits.
Well, yeah, you know, these people have never had a trouble finding ways to spend their money. The governor has a powerful relationship with the people in the legislature, and he'll probably lead the way in terms of the budgetary process and what happens.
You mentioned the governor's change of heart on marijuana. Now the governor says he's supportive of procurement reform.
Oh, boy. Well, let me tell you, if this governor has anything to worry about, it's the treatment of Tom DiNapoli and the Office of Comptroller, more importantly than even the individual. You took away from him the right to pre-audit. I've said it before. You know that. You know that either he will come on and talk to me about this, as he has in the past. He's been very open, or he won't. But let me tell you, to take away from the controller the pre-audit function meant an invitation to disaster, and disaster's what we got. That was Joe Prococo, Elaine Calieros, Todd Howe, all being convicted or taking a plea. If Tom DiNapoli had been allowed to do his proper pre-audit inspections, maybe, nobody says absolutely, but maybe these guys would have been caught. Maybe it never would have happened. Well, he's been asked about this. I've written about it again and again and again. I've talked to him about it. Now, apparently, he understands that this is an unpopular position because he's been saying, okay, we need to have inspections, but we'll do it in my department. In other words, in the executive offices. That's ridiculous. That's why we have a constitutional provision that the controller's office will be separate from the executive. Otherwise, what you get is, sorry, the fox guarding the hen house.
Legislative Gazette political observer, Alan Chartok.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. With the legislature back in Albany this week, good government groups are promoting legislation they say would fight corruption in state contracting. More from the Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas.
The watchdogs say despite the conviction of top aides and campaign contributors to Governor Andrew Cuomo for rigging more than $1 billion in state economic contracts, the legislature has failed to enact substantial clean contracting reforms. Alex Camarda is the senior policy advisor for Reinvent Albany.
For the last 2 years, we've advocated for legislation that would enable the comptroller to review contracts before they're executed, and for the creation of a database that would show for each company receiving state subsidies how much they're receiving under what programs and whether they're producing the required jobs in exchange for the state's investment.
Watchdogs say in May, a bipartisan majority of the state Senate passed the Comptroller's Procurement Integrity Act to review contracts before they are executed for state-affiliated nonprofits, along with a database of deals listing all business subsidies received by companies. The bill stalled in the Assembly. With the legislature back in town, 113th District Assemblywoman Carrie Werner, a Democrat, wants transparency fast-tracked.
I think that it's important for us to restore the public trust in how the government is spending its money, particularly around economic development initiatives, and that requires a higher level of transparency and accountability than we've had in place up to this point. I will continue to be a co-sponsor on that bill. I will continue to push in the Assembly for us to take that up.
Camarda says it's important both measures are revived.
Examples that are spotlighted in the media, like the Amazon deal in New York City, where they're receiving $3 billion to produce 40,000 jobs, but we have no idea really for particular companies how much in benefits they're receiving across many different deals and contracts across the state. And so that database would provide that level of transparency. And the need for the comptroller's review we saw last year with the conviction of high-ranking officials in the Cuomo administration and campaign contributors to the governor, because we saw that contracts were rigged for some big upstate development projects.
Camarda adds the governor once promised contracting reform and is hopeful it'll pass this year.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
New York State is launching a new initiative to protect drinking water and looking for volunteers to take part. A leading environmental group has welcomed the news, as the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn reports.
The State Department of Environmental Conservation and Department of Health are co-leading the effort to provide municipalities with resources and tools to proactively protect their drinking water sources. They're looking for municipalities to volunteer to apply. The goal is to select up to 30 municipalities and help them develop and implement a drinking water source protection plan. The state will pay the cost for the planning process. An initial $3 million in funding from the state's Environmental Protection Fund has been dedicated to the pilot project. Dan Shapley is Water Quality Program Director with Riverkeeper. He praises the program, especially in light of the PFOS water contamination crisis that beset Newburgh nearly 3 years ago.
Riverkeeper has been advocating this for a couple years, at least since the Newburgh crisis, and you can really draw a direct line from the drinking water problems in Newburgh to Riverkeeper's call for action and the state's. This is the part of the state's response, and we're very happy to see this program roll out.
Erica Ringwald is DEC spokeswoman.
Protecting New York's precious drinking water resources is our priority. This announcement advances Governor Cuomo's Water Quality Rapid Response Team's ongoing efforts to aggressively investigate and address risks to New York's drinking water across the state. Access to clean drinking water is fundamental to the health and vitality of our communities, and we encourage municipalities to apply for this important new program.
The application deadline is February 15th. The program will pair local officials with consultants and state water resource scientists. Communities can then take appropriate land use actions or seek financial assistance for project implementation from the $2.5 billion Clean Water Infrastructure Act of 2017. Shapley says the program will help municipalities understand the risk to their drinking water supply and develop an action plan to reduce and eliminate those risks. Such a program also could help or reduce the health and monetary cost of treatment post-contamination.
This is essentially what has been happening in Newburgh, with the state taking an active role in updating the assessment of risks and developing a plan that the community can use. It has not been a perfect process, but it's a good, important step for Newburgh, and we expect to see that in other places.
Other places he feels would benefit from the program include the Hudson Seven, which are the towns of Esopus, Hyde Park, and Lloyd, along with the towns and villages of Poughkeepsie and Rhinebeck. Plus, he says,
Rockland County has a big central water supply for its county that could really benefit. There's several communities in Westchester County that could benefit. Troy has a big reservoir that doesn't just serve itself, but several communities in Rensselaer County. And then there's the Mohawk River, which serves 100,000 people in Colony and Cohoes, and there's an aquifer that is integral to the river, and another 120 or so thousand people rely on it, all in the same part of the Mohawk River. So there are a lot of communities around our region who can really benefit from increased planning and implementation of projects to protect their water at its source.
Riverkeeper served as a member of the advisory group that helped draft the Drinking Water Source Protection Program.
You've got 85,000 chemicals in use in our society, but we only look for maybe 100 or so in drinking water supplies. So the best thing we can do to prevent the next contamination event is to protect drinking water at its source and not let contaminants get into it, whatever those may be. So it may be PFOA, it may be PFOS, it may be something that you and I aren't talking about today that down the road in 5 or 10 years we realize is really risky.
More program information and a link to the application are at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Last week, Governor Andrew Cuomo delivered his inaugural address at Ellis Island. It was a speech with unsubtle jabs at the Trump administration's immigration policies versus New York's melting pot history. As lawmakers returned to Albany this week for the new legislative session, 115th District State Assemblyman D. Billy Jones, who represents Clinton, Franklin, and part of St. Lawrence counties, tells the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley that the governor had previously outlined his agenda, so the speech offered no real surprises.
I think we knew a lot of the points that he had made earlier a couple of weeks ago when he made his address, his agenda. He put that out there. So really nothing new, more or less on a national tone that I took away from it. Kind of the anti-federal government, anti-Trump rhetoric. But, you know, here in the North Country, I'm concerned about getting things done for the residents of the North Country. So that's my agenda.
You sound disappointed that the governor was focused on national issues in his inaugural speech.
Not really disappointed. I just think we have issues here in New York State that need to be addressed. And, you know, it's his inauguration. It was his speech. He can do whatever he wants. I'm just focused on issues here that relate to the North Country and helping the residents get a better life here.
So speaking of issues, particularly for the North Country, what do you plan to focus on in your second term?
Right off the bat, I think we need to continue to provide broadband and cell phone service to residents of the North Country. That's probably the number one issue that comes from my residents. We need to hold the executive to the promise that they made last year in providing broadband and high-speed internet service to all the residents of New York State. And we need to continue the implementation of that. Also, cell phone coverage is a big issue now more than ever because the companies just aren't investing in repairing landlines. And there still are pockets here in my district that do not have cell phone service or internet service or quality internet service. So that's an issue. Continue the Quebec-New York partnership that we have. I was happy to provide funding for that in the last couple of years. That's something that we need to do. We need to have our businesses continue to thrive here. They're doing very well in the Plattsburgh region and in the North Country, and that's something that's a priority to me. And workforce development. We need good workforce development programs. We need to release some of that funding that was promised for these programs last year. I think we can integrate a lot of organizations into that, and I would love to see our community colleges utilized more when that comes. And I travel all around my district, and to every business that I have traveled to and visited, their number one concern is labor. We can talk about all the other issues, but it's labor. There are jobs out there, but we need to have a trained workforce in working in those jobs.
You also mentioned the Quebec-New York partnership. Are you seeing any enhanced challenges with that, with the tariffs with China and some of the cross-border problems, perhaps, that have been created by the Trump administration?
Sure. Well, last year, what I was hearing from businesses and industries here on our side of the border was, and also on the Quebec side, was just the apprehension, the anxiety of not having an agreement. So I think that affected their businesses a little bit. But I think now that there is somewhat of an agreement in place, they are a lot more optimistic for 2019. And from what I'm hearing, they see good things for this coming year. It's predictable. They know what they have to do, so they're happy with the coming year and knowing what they're up against.
You've been working on workforce development since you first went into office, and it's something that the economic developers have been working on for a long time. Have we been making progress, or have things stalled?
You know, last year in the budget, we did appropriate a large number for that, and it was in part of the governor's initiative as well. But I'm having trouble finding out where the money is going, or if it has gone. I'm not saying there's been any kind of malfeasance or anything, but I'm wondering, or I'm having trouble figuring out if the money's been released. You know, we can put money into programs and do all this stuff, but it really comes down to the implementation of these programs and to see where the money goes. And from what I've been hearing from some of the workforce development people around this area, they have not seen that money come to fruition. So we need to do that. Not only that, we need to use these community colleges as workforce development centers. And what they need is they need a little bit of funding. We have the Manufacturing Institute over at Clinton Community. They need some operating money. We need businesses. So I think we're seeing that, and I think we'll see that more and more as this workforce shortage or this labor shortage that these businesses are experiencing now.
The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley interviewing Democrat D. Billy Jones, who represents Clinton, Franklin, and part of St. Lawrence County in the New York State Assembly. That about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1902, or just listen to podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.